Welcome back to Business Day Spotlight. I'm your host, Dise Tsomotsweneng, acting editor of Business Day, and today we've got some intriguing insights lined up. We are taking a look at Nedbank's cautious yet optimistic outlook for 2024. With the projected 1.4% GDP growth and potential cuts in the prime lending rate, there's a lot to unpack. So our guest today is Mfundo Nkuhlu, the COO of Nedbank. Mfundo, I know we don't have much time, so we're going to jump straight into it. First off, how do this earnings report measure up against Nedbank's pitch to investors?
An equity of 18%, that is our level of ambition.
Yeah.
We would have wanted the reporting period end of 2024 to hit the watermark of 16% ROE. We delivered an ROE of 15.8, as it turned out. So, but against the prevailing conditions characterized by high level of uncertainty, the market, slow growth overall, with GDP projected to grow at 0.5%, what that told us is that asset creation was tepid, both in the corporate market and for individuals who continue to deleverage, to deliver. And so against that, it is not surprising then that we experienced the headwinds. What is more important for us is that this result is underpinned by delivery of our strategy, which gives us momentum over the medium term. So our medium-term goals of getting to 18% ROE have not changed as a consequence.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you very much. So this 15.8% is more or less what you expected, or is it missing your own targets?
Well, it's within touching distance of the target. Okay. Certainly, in the first instance, we measure that against a cost of equity of 15%,
yeah,
which would then tell us that we continue to deliver and we value accretive to shareholders. We continue to have a strong capital position with our CET1 ratio at 13.3%. And so we've not been skimpy on the capital that we hold as a group.
Yeah.
And so it's a return against that capital base.
Yeah.
And because of that strong capital position, it has allowed us also to sustain the paid out ratio on the dividend at the top end of that range.
Yeah, yeah. No, no, that's great. If I could go back to the prevailing conditions, things seems to be improving if you look at the expectations for the economy, especially for 2025. I know yours is around 1.4%, which is better than what we are probably going to see for 2024 as data is due to come out today. Are you opening? You mentioned that there was a slowdown in asset growth. So I presume that you mean like in the advancement of loans. Are you opening credit taps? Is there room for that? Is that what are you seeing among people?
Well, it's not a change of our risk appetite and risk metrics.
Yeah,
we've generally been ready to support economic activity.
Yeah,
what suddenly dried up were opportunities of financing bankable projects.
Yeah,
and so we remain open for business.
Yeah,
you correct my observation. In a sense, we've started a rate reducing cycle. We probably have gone through a 3.5 basis point cuts on the interest rate.
Yeah,
the most recent of which was a 25 basis point cut in January. Mm. And so that cycle certainly, there's evidence of that. which underscores the point you're making about improving conditions. That is against the backdrop of inflation having moved to the bottom end of the range that well 4%, with sub having indicated that they want to sustain it at 4.5%. And so the reduction in inflation has been helpful. Paul, that said, our expectation is that the rate of production cycle will nonetheless be shallow. And so we're only forecasting another 25 basis points for the balance of the year, which we've penciled for July. And thereafter, we would expect the rates to remain stable for the period ahead. There are risks that have emerged in the environment, which even though we're cautiously optimistic, we've got to keep the BDI on. Some of those risks are driven by geopolitical developments, which raise the prospect that you could have global inflation rising. And if that were to be the case, then you would see interest rate reduction on a global scale slowing down. Already, the Fed has taken a wait-and-see attitude to see the impact of domestic policies in the U.S. If you think of the interest rate differential between ourselves and that economy, that will slow down interest rate reduction on our side. We then would have to keep a PDI also on the contagion effect of those policies on the strength of our currencies. Okay. Because if the rent weakens, then we do run the risk of imported inflation. Which then alters the now growth prospect in the period ahead. So we're keeping a PDI on all of those the potential developments. But yes, the base view, the house view, is that we should have improving conditions in 2025 relative to 2024, perhaps albeit coming stronger in the second half of the year than the first.
But yet tempered by what's going on globally. I'm with you.
What's going on around us.
Okay. No, thank you very much for that. You mentioned lack of bankable projects. So that to me suggests that you have money there that can finance the economy. And I'm presuming here you're talking about corporate demand. Can you give me a bit of more detail on that? How much, for example, have you turned down that was not bankable in the past financial year? And what were the main reasons?
Well, number one, we'd like to manage the bank with our CET1 capital between 11 and 12%. That's the mandate we have from the board. We're currently reporting 13.3%. And so you could, from that vantage point, say we have excess capital. Now, if you have excess capital, if you do, you can return capital to shareholders. And we've done that with a share buyback scheme in the past. Second, you can deploy that capital in support of growth. Third, you can also use that capital for bolt-on acquisitions as opportunities arise. So, in a sense, we spoiled for choice in that respect. Now, the ability to deploy the capital in favor of assisting clients is also dependent on clients being open to business. They themselves are dependent on levels of business confidence in the market. And clearly, what really has held back our economy is, we all know, structural constraints. Some of these projects have not moved very quickly. We saw last year in the conclusion of the seventh round of renewable energy projects right at the desk. And so we participated there to the tune We know that that book has grown 32% to 40 billion rand. That gives you a flavor of our ability to participate in this. And we're involved in 7 of the 8 projects with respect to solar solution. We're participants in 7 of the 8 projects with respect to battery storage capability. There will be opportunities of plenty, certainly, in unlocking the transport and logistics chain to get the economy moving. There are concerns all around about the deteriorating quality of water and related water infrastructure in the country.
Yeah.
That's opportunity for funding. Really, what we need to do is to align all of these objectives, the overall economic program for the country, raise confidence levels, and then investors will be keen to participate, and banks as funders, including ourselves, will be ready to avail the bank's balance sheet.
Yeah. If I could just change gears for a bit, maybe take you back to NetBank's pitch to investors. One of the main things that I presume you've been personally overseeing is the rollout of the IT infrastructure to modernize NetBank. So in total, how much has been spent on that? And because I see it's now complete.
11.7 billion rand has been spent on that project.
Yeah.
And to date, we've realized the initial business case benefits of some 76%. As you would know, the rollout of this program was modularized. And so the idea was that we eke out benefits as we roll out. We do not wait for the final conclusion of that. The last module was the modernization of our core banking systems, which we completed at the end of last year.
Yeah.
We will deliver in March this month the last installments of digital client onboarding and servicing journeys for the home loans and the vehicle finance businesses in retail. And so that is what we call completion of managed evolution. We, alongside that, we also delivered a target operating model, which was really a cost optimization element of the program on the back of the IT investment. Cumulatively, the benefits there are over 5 billion rand, with TOM 1 having delivered 2 billion rand of those benefits, and TOM 2, 3 billion of that. And so we concluded that last year. It does not mean that this is the end of technology benefits, both for revenue growth as well as productivity gains.
Yeah.
You don't just hit a cliff and stop on all these technology investments.
Yeah.
As we all know, we've got to keep pace with the market, continue to modernize, develop new capabilities, particularly in the AI space. And Gen AI, that is where it's all headed. And our focus now is using our data and insights capabilities to monetize data as we go forward. And against that backdrop, we're projecting that over the medium term, we would have sustainable cash flow spend of the order of magnitude of 2 billion rand per annum. And so that is how we think of the technology landscape and what lies ahead.
Right, right. Just to clarify, so the 76%, is that the return you're getting on the 11.7 billion? Did I get that right?
Yes, those are the benefits today, largely led by the cost side of that.
Yeah.
The trouble with technology projects, as we all know, there's always a challenge with the attribution of where that value lies.
All right.
It's very easy to be definitive about the cost savings.
Yeah.
The revenue benefits live on the business side of the equation.
Yes.
And there it's always a debate whether is the sales initiatives that have brought the revenue in. Yeah. Is the technology platform that's responsible for that.
Yeah.
And so we kind of live with that messiness. Okay. Understand it.
Okay, I understand. No, thanks very much. Yeah. So in terms of the data monetization, so I'm guessing here there is, because you've got this platform, Avo Supershop, is that where you're going with data monetization or?
It's part of the suite.
Yeah.
We'll certainly review now where we are with Avo, what's been delivered and realized relative to the initial business case and outlook. Mm. In the very nature of these things that you do the periodic reviews. Mm. But it's also beyond that, just banks traditionally collect data all the time from our clients.
Yeah.
Now, we want to drive cross-sell and upsell opportunities. You need to better understand your client from a 360 review and be in a position to provide proactive solutions to clients.
Yeah.
Even ahead of their being aware of their needs themselves.
Yeah.
We are in the business of providing advice, and the quicker we are able to do that ahead of peers, it gives us better than fair fighting chance in the market. And so that is what we're seeking to do in order to drive monetization. Now, as monetization on the commercial end, the front end with interface with the client, but there's also the use of that data to mitigate data and model risks. Yeah. In our environment. Mm. And so there will be risk-related benefits.
Yeah.
And that is important because as a bank, we want to create sustainable revenue growth on the back of a soundly managed risk environment. And so we look at both ends of that spectrum.
Right.
And that is what our focus going forward will be.
Oh, this is part of the reason there is a restructuring in the retail banking division. Is that fair assessment?
That is primarily driven by a desire to make sure that we are client-centric in our posture to the market.
Yep.
We face the market to serve defined client segments.
Right.
And so what the new offering will be, the personal and private banking will be for individual clients.
Yeah.
So from entry-level and entry-level banking all the way to high net worth individual clients will be looked after by that business. The business and commercial banking outfit will look at juristic clients from small business all the way commercial banking clients, as well as mid-sized the corporate. Right. So that will be the segment. And then the high-end corporate and investment banking team will look at large corporates. And so that is how that segmentation works.
Okay.
That is really what drives the refresh from a reorganization point of view.
Yeah. For a final question, if I may, Ntatenkuhlu,
by all means.
Yeah. The external environment, particularly in South Africa, we had a budget delay. I think largely it was welcomed as democracy in action, the heartbeat of our democracy. What I want to ask you is, what is your wish list as a bank, or maybe as a bank executive for the budget that's coming up in next week? What is your wish list?
First of all, he listed from the obvious. A budget statement is a total representation of the political intentions and the political program of the country.
Yeah.
And so in a sense, it should reflect the country's priorities. Mm. The medium-term budget policy statement that was given in October indicated a desire to reduce a government expenditure, to rein in debt servicing costs, in order to support growth initiatives in the economy. And you asked, what would we prefer? We would prefer a growth-oriented budget, because growth will lift all boats. It will also give a country the capability to address an intractable unemployment challenge that we all face. And therefore, if they were to steer close to the direction that set out, it would certainly help to undergird confidence in the market. And against that backdrop, clearly, funding and financing institutions to be available to support growth initiatives, and that is where we would see ourselves playing our principal role. I suppose that we all wait for the 12th to see where the balance of evidence goes. Mm-hmm. And I think the difficult challenge they're facing is if they go for raising goals. I think the choice is whether you raise that as a source of financing the budget, or you trim back on the expenditure side.
Yeah.
You can therefore not put further strain on consumers who are already under pressure. Mm. That's where really the trade-off lies. Mm. And the political leadership makes that call. What we'd like to see is that it should broadly be supportive of the growth of the economy. I mean, the sad reality is that over a 10-year period, average growth rate in our economy has been 0.8%.
Yeah.
That's paltry.
Yeah.
And it's just not good enough to meet the needs of our society. And we all know those are vast, they are immense, they are wide and varied. And we've got to be able to use our resources to reach all the far-flung corners of our country.
Yeah. So whatever happens, the decision that they make on the 12th will be painful. No one is going to come out there.
But then real decisions are always the tough ones.
Yes. Yes, that's true. That's true. Thank you very much, Ntateng Kutlu. It was really a pleasure to speak to you. I hope to get to meet you outside of this and maybe, just talk generally.
It's a pleasure to say to you.
Thank you.
Short.
Thank you very much.
Forward to that as well.
All right.
Appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye. And that's a wrap for today's episode of Business Day Spotlight. I hope you enjoyed our deep dive into NetBank's 2025 outlook and their financial results. I've been your host, Disetso Motsweneng. Join us next time for more of the latest in the financial world.